You're listening to an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn, preaching God's word to New York's biggest borough.
We're wrapping up our study of the book of Joshua today. And before we move on, let's review. So Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt, 40 years in the desert, dies and hands over leadership to Joshua and then dies. Interestingly enough, Moses actually means to draw out, like to pull something out of, like he did the Israelites out of Egypt. And Joshua, I mean, salvation is actually Yeshua, which Jesus would be named down the line as well. So Moses drew them out, and ideally, Joshua is going to lead them into a place of the promised land. Joshua leads the nation through the Jordan River, has a very important interaction with an angel. The whole whose side are you on conversation happens, which is a wrong question, of course. There's a question you should be asking is, am I on God's side or not? The walls of Jericho fall, and things are great. And then Achan, or Achan, takes what God says to leave, and the Israelites lose their very next battle at Ai. Repercussions are intense, but God sends them back, and they are victorious. From chapter 12, where all of the battles are listed that the Israelites won. They won in Jerusalem, Hebron, Eglon, Gezer, Debir, Hormuz. So they're making up names almost at this point of places that they won. It's the 31 kings are taken over by the Israelite army. Now, I think it's important to note there that the Israelites were not supposed to win these battles. They were normally outnumbered, normally out-equipped. But God was able to do magic in 31 individual battles after Ai, and they victorious across the board. Then chapter 13 to 22 is, I would say, the most boring part of the book of Joshua, because it's just land distribution. It's really just, okay, you guys get this land, you guys get that land. I would say it's boring for us. For the Israelites, it was mind-blowing, because this was the covenant that God made to Abraham of being, like, lived out. That, like it's Abraham, you're going to be the descendant of many, and you're going to have your own territory farther than what you can see. And they waited for generations after hearing the legend of that promise, and now they're here. Canaan's land is in front of them, and now they're getting the piece of the land that God promised to them. So for them, it was a really big deal. The land's divided up. Joshua 23, Joshua addresses the leaders of these tribes that are about to get sent out into the promised land, into their own portions. He prompts them to love God above all else, and reminds them that just as amazing as the victories that came in the times that they obeyed God, there's also a sober reality that disobeying God will ultimately lead to destruction. Before everyone leaves, Joshua brings everyone back, and there's one final address in Joshua 24. One final address. This is Joshua's last charge to God's people. And this is what he said. Joshua 24, we'll read in verse 2. Joshua said to all the people, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived in the Euphrates River and worshipped other gods. But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the Euphrates and led him throughout Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I assigned the hill country of Seir and Esau, but Jacob and his family went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did there, and I brought you out. When I brought out your people out of Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued them with chariots and horsemen as far as the Red Sea. But they cried out to the Lord for help, and they put darkness between you and the Egyptians. He brought the sea over them and covered them. You saw with your own eyes what I did to the Egyptians. Then you lived in the wilderness for a long time. I brought you out of the land of the Amorites who lived east of Jordan. They fought against you, but I gave them into your hands. I destroyed them from before you, and you took possession over the land. When Balak, son of Zippor, and the king of Moab, prepared to fight against Israel, he sent for Balaam, son of Beor, to put a curse on you. But I would not listen to Balaam, because so he blessed you again and again, and I delivered you out of his hand. Then you crossed the Jordan and came to Jericho. The citizens of Jericho fought against you, as did the Amorites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hittites, Gerizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, and I gave them into your hands. I sent the horn in front of you, which drove them out before you. Also, the two Amorite kings. You do not do it with your own sword and bow and your bow. In verse 13. So I gave you a land which do not toil, and cities that do not build, and you live in them and eat from the vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. So Joshua gets one final chance to convince them of what they need to do going forward. And what does he say? Before we move on, let's review. He tells them their history, their story, their testimony, but he makes very, very sure to emphasize who got them there. It says, I took your father. I gave him Isaac. I gave Jacob. I sent Moses. I brought you out of the land. I destroyed them. I did this. And then he closes by saying, and just so you get, in case you get confused, you didn't win these battles with your own sword and bow and arrow. I won the battles. This is God talking. I won the battles. So this is, again, this is Joshua's last chance to get these guys to get it. And what does he do? He says, before we move on, let's review. Joshua's final address, he reminds them about what God has done. More specifically, God tells Joshua in his final address, hey, make sure you remind them of what I have done. If you retell this story without the consistent hand of God, it tells this Hollywood-like tale of a small nation who freed themselves from slavery, won battle after battle by military conquest and amazing leadership, and now are in a place where they can conquest what was promised in the beginning. It's not really what happened if you remove God from the equation. So the NFL will give the Super Bowl winning team 150 rings. When you get 150 rings to do whatever you want with. Your roster is about 53 people, coaching staff another 30 or so. So you have a lot left over. So what teams will do very often is find custodians, they'll find practice players, they'll give these rings to the people that kind of made it happen, but they don't actually play. Can you imagine if a custodian that has a Super Bowl ring starts walking around, look what I won. Let me tell you about the story of how I won the Super Bowl. Okay, listen, you have a ring, and that's amazing. But let's be clear, you didn't get the team here. And I think that level of arrogance, and you really missed the boat, is what God was trying to remind the Israelites here, that listen, you won, you have the evidence of victory right in front of you. Well, let's not get this crazy here. This happened because God had an end in and through everything. The story, if accurately told, is a God full of mercy and power brought victory to a people that were destined to be wiped off the earth. They shouldn't have even existed. Abraham had no business having children. And that's how we got here, from Abraham. He had no business having, he's like 1,017 years old. That's what Phil told me, at least. That's how old he was. He had no business having kids. So this had to have been the hand of God. You have to remember how you got here and who got you here. This church has survived a lot. From immediate persecution from the Roman government in Acts 4 to the initial spread of the gospel that was only triggered by the martyrdom of Stephen in Acts 7 to the Gentiles being finally accepted in Acts 15 to Peter and Paul getting killed. I mean, just think about the early stages of this church. Peter, the guy who people thought, okay, well, Jesus is gone, but at least we have him, he gets murdered. Paul, like, okay, well, Peter, maybe we get murdered. The apostles just get slaughtered. Like, think about what that would do to this church right now. If the leaders got systematically eliminated for what they were preaching, like, it would shake things up. And that's what happened in the early, all they had to rely on was Jesus' promises, and we hope this works out. And the leaders were killed. The church has been through so much. And you go from that point to 2019, the church has been through a lot. There's been multiple instances that, hey, if it was a man-made thing, this would have disappeared a long time ago. And maybe that doesn't interest you as much. I was actually going to do like a whole blur on how we got from Pentecost to Hanson Prince. But maybe what's more impactful is for you to think about how you got here personally. Maybe not a history about stuff. Maybe just look at your life. I think for me, I lucked out with the family that I was born into. If somehow you could recreate my character, that's to grow up outside of this church, good luck trying to convince me to come to your little family group, Bible talk, little situation, study the Bible. No, there's no way. I know myself too well. There's no way that if God hadn't rearranged genetics and time and space and all of that, do I end up here? There's I'm at this point well aware enough of myself to know that with all of my garbage, the only way for me to even give this a shot was a embryo version of Stephen. You are now going to the church services inside your mom's belly. And when you come out, you will be at the services. And until you're old enough to say no, you will be at the services. And that's. But then I even think, so I got baptized July 1st in 2006. And from that point to now, I feel like I also lucked out that I'm here. Immorality, idolatry. I put myself in situations that I've seen my peers that also got baptized as teens in this church and now are gone. I was in the exact same situation. I don't deserve to be here. Honestly, if it wasn't for a impromptu group discipling that Damon ended up running at a ICMC a couple years ago, there is no way. I mean, the guys that know what's going on know what's going on. I'll actually say there's at least seven people in this room that would not be here today if it wasn't for a very random, why is Brooklyn in a circle crying during the party on a Saturday night meeting that. Wow. How did I get here? You know, I think, honestly, if it wasn't for Hannah, if God didn't place my Hannah in the way and time and situation that He did, at that point in my life, that honestly, like I was one bad decision away from being gone forever, and then Hannah just happens to be here and for the first time interested in me. At a place that I had no business being of interest to someone else. And now I'm here. You know, like, so I'm convinced that I did not make this happen. I couldn't have, because I had, every time I tried, things went bad. So there's no way that I could then somehow logically say, oh yeah, no, I made this work. If it wasn't for God rearranging stuff in my life, I am not here today. How can I doubt the presence of God when I am only present because of Him? And that's what Joshua is trying to get them to remember. That guys, you didn't make this happen. Joshua closes his leadership of the Israelites by reminding them what God has done. Now, if you follow the path of this group, they were constantly told to make monuments after victories. They would win, and they would build just a stone little mound of rocks. Like, this is the rock where we won this battle. And I think that visually, it's just kind of a mound. But I think we might need to put up monuments in our own life to remind us of where we are, how we got here, and who actually made it happen. So before we move on, let's review. We need to remember what God has done, because if we don't, we can complain about the here and now. If you forget what God has done, why don't I have that thing, or that job, or that opportunity, or this sin? Why don't I have that? When is it my turn? When am I going to have a chance to? Why is this happening to me? Where is my engagement? Listen, Mike Hidalgo was a baby in this church, and now he's married in this church. Stephen Cruz is about to get married. I know as a fact that that can sit for many is, I was here when these guys were ideas. Before there was even, before Stephen Cruz was Stephen Cruz, I was here. God, what, am I doing something wrong? And I think it becomes this complaining because of where you are, because you forgot the monuments of how you got here. Remember what God has done, because if you don't, you complain, or you start to think you did it yourself. And therefore, are qualified to take it from here, if you got here yourself. Let's look at Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy 8. Crazy to see this passage in there. Deuteronomy 8, he gave you manna to eat in the wilderness, something your ancestors had never known, to humble and test you, so that you, in the end, may go well with you. You say to yourself, my power and strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me, which is nuts and stuff, fell from the sky. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. Psalm 77. Psalm 77, verse 11. The first one was Deuteronomy 8, 16 to 18. And this is, you're welcome. Deuteronomy 8, 16 to 18. And this is Psalms 77 in verse 11. I'll remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I'll remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on your mighty deeds. So conceptually here, it's very simple. We just have to remember who God is and what he's done. And that will keep you from complaining and also keep you from thinking that you somehow do this on your own. And again, just so Joshua says, before you move on, let's review. It is important to note here that the point is not to dwell on the past. Rearview mirrors exist so that you can see to make sure that nothing coming at your blind side is going to affect where you plan on going. But you know that you can't drive to a destination staring at the rearview mirror. It's logically, it should, you're destined to crash if you're fixated on the past rather than acknowledging it being there and glance every now and then to make sure that nothing's going to surprise you from around the sides. That's how rearview mirrors work. And I think just like God doesn't want them to dwell on the past. He said, hey, just be aware that it's there. And use it as forward direction and not the thing that you're focused on and fixated on. Hurt and betrayal and disappointment are real things. But we can't allow past failures, whether on our part or the part of people that we trusted, to prevent us from following God's plan. It's you can't snap away times you've been hurt. But we must look ahead as well. For some, holding on to grudges is a form of idol worship. That we make this feeling and this thing, like, I'll sacrifice everything, but I'm not letting go of this feeling I have about this situation, or this person, or this church, or this, you know, this leader. And the grudge has become this idol that we worship. Jump back to Psalm, not Psalm, sorry, Joshua 24. And right after reviewing the history, Joshua says in verse 14, now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshipped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. We have to throw this stuff away. Whatever is become the idol, the thing that's distracting you from God's plan for the future, throw it away. You know, family time, for a little bit, if you guys don't mind. You have no choice, it's in my notes. There was a letter that was circulated around our movement some years back that caused, a stir. You know, even though in my own research I found that most people actually didn't read it, but they reacted to people's reactions. It really shook things up. People were hurt. People attacked others to protect themselves, and though some decided to use this commotion as an exit plan from God's church and hand over lordship of their lives, the pruning of the church in the process hopefully has led to this family that seeks for personal righteousness rather than an unhealthy attachment to leadership or structure. The letter I'm talking about, I mean, if anyone wants to read it, you have phones and you have access to it right now. Let's actually turn to it, Philippians. Philippians 3. If you're holding on to this stuff, maybe it's time to let go. Philippians 3, I'm not sure why we're laughing. I just described the letter in our movement that shook the church up a little bit and pruned the church. And it's the inspired word of God, so it should hold more weight than any. Why are we still laughing? Philippians 3, I still don't get the joke. Philippians 3, in verse 12, not that I have already obtained this or have already arrived at my goal, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining for what is ahead, I press on towards a goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. We have to sometimes just let go of the past in order to strain forward towards the goal at the end of the day, which is not acknowledgement or recognition or accept that you hurt my feelings, but it's to become the full measure of Jesus Christ and get to live with him for eternity in heaven. And sometimes the baggage that we idolize is going to prevent us from making that move. We have to sometimes just let, without an apology, without acknowledgement of fault, just listen, it happened. I'm hurt. I was hurt. But at the end of the day, I understand that God is bigger than this stuff. So you think it inside, just inside the first century church, there was violence within the community of believers, and they survived. I think it's time to move on. Let go of the past. Let go of these idols and serve God. Still not sure why that was funny. Forget what's holding you back. Strain towards the goal. And then, you jump back to Joshua in verse 20, during verse 15. So now Joshua has said, before we move on, let's review. Goes through the history of the Israelite community. Tells them, okay, now that you've remembered who brought you here, get rid of your idols and serve God. And then verse 15, but if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served before beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. This is a nice plaque to have in front of your, when you walk into your house. But the buildup is not very encouraging. Joshua tells them, again, remember how God brought them here. Throw away your idols and serve the Lord. And if this doesn't sound like it's something you are willing to do, then take your useless idols and go. Go back and repeat the same mistakes that you made separate from God when you thought you can do this on your own. If you don't want this, then go. Some perspective here. And now, I think I'm lightening the intensity that Joshua presented this in. I think all of us are because of some contextual stuff that we're not aware of. So one of the Canaanite gods that had creeped into the Israelite community was this god Molech. Now, in celebration of Molech, prostitution was a form of honoring this god. And it would be done in and around the temple dedicated to him. There was also frequent child sacrifice. And what they built a statue of this god Molech out of bronze, and they would put a fire under the hands of the statue, so that the hands of this bronze statue were red hot. And they would drop their children in the hands in honor of this god Molech. I'll stop there. The historical accounts of this stuff is extremely disturbing. They were known across the land. Those are the guys that sacrificed their children on this scolding bronze statue, and somehow Molech is supposed to bless them because of this. And the Israelite community, small compromise, then, you know, this Molech doesn't seem that bad. So when Joshua is saying, get rid of the idol, it's not just like, yeah, you know, the traditions of this land are not helpful for us. No. This is why, in many cases, God asked for elimination of the people that were there. Because if you live next to this stuff, what do you think is going to happen? God's people can't exist in this place where they're sacrificing children and worshiping gods of prostitution. It can't. And they were given opportunities out, like Rahab. Rahab was given, hey, listen, if you want out, please join our side. And the people that said no, I would rather continue to worship as God for my prostitution and sacrificing my children. And go, okay, well, then you got to go. So when the Israelite community starts compromising and accepting these as, yeah, it's not that bad, it's a dangerous place to find yourself. We might think that our modern idolatry is somehow less horrific or less violent. But when God is not God of our lives, even the children will suffer. Because they're looking at us. They'll see. And listen, no one will ever be perfect at home. No one will ever be perfect. It's impossible. But they can see progress. They can see trajectory. They can see perspective. They can see where are you putting your priorities. When God isn't God, everyone's up. Joshua gives them a way out. Listen, that's what you want to do. Take your idols and go. Here's another way out. If lordship and the commitment to the standard of righteousness that Christ presents isn't what you intend on doing with your life, then this church might not be for you. If being an active light with deliberate intent on bringing people into the knowledge of the gospel is not your plan for your life, this church, maybe, is not for you. If you are comfortable in your racial bias and unchecked prejudice, maybe this church is not for you, because there is no room in heaven for the racist when there is no room in heaven for race. And if that's your stance, that I'm comfortable in my bias, maybe this church is not for you. If you withhold love from other members of this congregation over a grudge from the past, maybe this church is not for you. We don't need more members. We don't need more people. God desires more Christians who sacrifice their life over because they understand what God presents for them. Amen. Not people to fill seats. Listen, we can very easily start preaching stuff to get more people here. It's not that complicated. But is it true? Well, then we're not going to do it. And if that's what you're looking for, maybe this church is not for you. Now, I'm not saying that we're perfect. I'm telling you, I am not perfect. I'll speak for Phil on Leslie's behalf. But Phil is also not perfect. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The church could fall apart, like physically act like a building itself, could collapse. But as for me and my house, you will serve the Lord. Phil can make even more changes and re-snap and bring stuff back to how they were before, like what I'm sure the new Avengers movie is going to be about. But as for me and my house, we will serve. We can change buildings, change times, change locations, change leaders, change schematics and plans and campaigns. But as for me and my house, we will. It could be financial issues that's just weighing on your heart, no matter, like, all the time. In complete awareness of that, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, even if it seems like it's not working. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Trump would win a second term. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord in Canada. That house is wherever you live. Somewhere else. Yeah, I can say that. I'm under 30. But this conceptually, the house can be just you. As for me and me, as for Stephen and everything that Stephen stands for, I have to decide on a daily basis, no matter what happens, no matter what social media is telling me, no matter what the world, no matter what is presented as, here's what, okay, quiet the noise, I will serve the Lord, no matter what. People that brought you here today may walk away. And on bad terms, that hurt your feelings incredibly. As for me, just me here for a second, I have to decide that nothing is going to get in the way. And I think that's not an arrogant statement. It's not, because you have to believe it. Well, the other side is humility. I hope I don't leave. You're like, well, no, that's not going to cut it. So to eternity, no matter what happens, and especially when that what happens, as for me and myself, I'm not going anywhere. But then when it starts talking about collectively our homes, I think if we're so brave, so I would even say allowed to be that brave in our statement of I'm not going anywhere, God, then I think our households should look the same. That is God obvious in your house? And not because you have pictures and crosses and candles with faces of someone on it. Is God an obvious presence when people come into what you call your living space? Is the way that that the families communicate to each other evidence of the presence of God? Our forgiveness on a spouse level, our communication and humility in talking to our children. Does that highlight the presence of God, or are you waiting for a Sunday to do that amongst others? As for me and my house, means that as parents, our primary responsibility is making God known in our house. The teen ministry, teen camp, teen bevo, lock-ins, these things are amazing in themselves, but I guarantee you, that's not going to change anyone's everything. It helps. It's like a little nudge in this, but it's the reason that you can't take the health of a youth and family ministry and measure it based on the week after teen camp. You can't. If you did that, oh my word, this is amazing. Every young person in our church wants to follow God. Well, of course, because they left their the junk of everything here to go away to hear lessons 3 times a day for 6 days. That's the power of the gospel. But if that's not being recreated at home, we're wasting our money. It's not cheap. It's not cheap. Steve just took all 17 of his kids and registered for vision. We're talking about a lot of money here. But why even put the money in if we're not recreating it at home? If the parents and the children, and this is for the children as well. This is not just a parent challenge.
I'm not shaming.
The kids, if you guys aren't, you're wasting your parents' money. You're wasting the church's money. You're wasting my money. If the thought is, when there's an event, I'm there. The kingdom doesn't run from event to event. We are not a social club. This is the movement of God's people. As for me and my house, and then the church. This church needs to be obviously God's. We have to talk the way that God would speak with people. When people walk in, our stances on current events need to be in line with how God responds to those situations. If not, then we become another club with opinions. And I don't think that's what we signed up for. As my house as a person, my house as my family, and our house as a church, we need to serve the Lord. Or take your idols and go somewhere else. From verse 16 to 27 of Joshua 24, this is interesting banter between Joshua and the people, where Joshua is like, so after Joshua said, hey, as for me and my house, they're like, oh yeah, us too. Far be it from us to ever take on idols into our home. And Joshua's like, you have idols in your home right now. I'm saying this speech because you have idols at home. Far be it for what? Like you're currently living this. I'm like, no. Our ancestors made those mistakes, but not us. And it goes back and forth between the two of them. And Joshua closes this in verse 28 by saying, then Joshua, I'm sorry, verse 27, see, he said to the people, this stone will be a witness against us. It has heard all the words the Lord has said to us. It will be a witness against you if you are untrue to your God. Then Joshua dismissed the people, each to their own inheritance. Which I think is a very fitting ending for our study of the book of Joshua. Because what's happening here is that this is what they were waiting for. This is the moment that, wow, like God, I know he's been coming through with the miracles and the Egypt and the seas parting, but it was all to get to this. It was all to get to the place that Abraham was promised, that we're going to have a place that's our own now, that we're going to get into the promised land. And now it's here. But now each of them has to decide, what am I going to do now? Now that I've reviewed how God got me, now that I've self-evaluated, it's like, am I holding on to any idols? And now that I have to take on this responsibility of, okay, well, no matter what's going on around me, me and my home will serve the Lord. Now you have to go home. And that's, Christianity is really more of a Sunday night to a Saturday night activity, where away from all of this, who's God? And who do you belong to? Because that was the challenge. And I wish I could tell you that all 12 tribes leave this and are just, God, I'm sorry for everything I've done before. I'm a different people now, and we will forever worship you. They don't. It's a mess from here. But that doesn't have to be said about us. We, again, with complete humility, can be so brave to say that I'm going to leave here today, and no matter what's going on everywhere else, I'm going to serve God with my entire being. And maybe you didn't do that coming in here today. Maybe you came in today like, I'm kind of doing this because I'm already doing it, and I don't like stopping. I don't like to not do what I'm doing already. It's kind of a routine at this point. Okay. The routine could be the idol. Hand over the idol. But as for me, I will serve God. The flow here is pretty simple. We have to remember what God has done already. It's crucial. I don't think it's possible to move forward without remembering who God is and what he's done already. And then, in doing that, it should give you all the resources you need to hand over whatever idols you're holding on to. Whether it's yourself, or another person, or a career, or an expectation, or reputation, or whatever it is, hand it over. Because it, by itself, is actually useless. It's not getting whatever you think is giving you. It's absolutely useless. And then, serve God, even if everyone else stops. Because who's going to present the gospel to the future if we all give up? The responsibility is on you as an individual. Just like it was on the apostles, just like it was in the first century church, just like from that initial explosion of Christianity to today, we carry that same responsibility. These Bible talk things that we're doing are not just a quirky plan to change things up. We can actually live this out right now. Remember what God has done. Get rid of your idols. Ask for me in my home. We'll serve the Lord. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn. For more information about our church, visit bkchurch.com.